Hi, this is Caitlin from Get Over It. I just wanted to add a trigger warning to this episode. We're going to be talking about some pretty sensitive subject matter related to abortions. So just a heads up on that. I also noticed that we misspoke a couple of times during the recording of this episode. So I think we maybe had some titles wrong or positions wrong. But just take what we're saying with a grain of salt. We were very sleep deprived and or hungover. Don't drink in podcast, kids. Without further ado, here's the episode. Hello, everyone. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Mo.
And this is Team Get Over It.
We're an all-female team participating in the greatest motoring adventure on the planet. The Mongo Rally.
We'll be driving 10,000 miles across mountains, deserts, and unknown terrain.
And along the way, we hope to spread our feminist and environmental ideals.
Join us here as we share our stories, thoughts, and interviews as we get ready for the Mongo Rally 2023.
Third time's the charm, I hope. Good day.
Welcome.
Alrighty. So a few weeks ago, most of us woke up to some absolutely horrifying and devastating news. Roe versus Wade had been struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court, effectively ending 50 years of guaranteed abortion rights in the U.S., which is a bunch of bullshit.
It is a bunch of bullshit. I'm not even American, but it's like a bunch of bullshit. Yeah. So, and in certain states, trigger laws snapped into effect, making abortion immediately illegal. Mm-hmm. There was recently a story circulating through social media of a 10-year-old girl who was raped and became pregnant, who was denied an abortion in her home state.
Texas.
So she then had to travel out of state to receive medical care. I mean, 10 years old.
Yep. Nope, it's fucked up.
That's messed up.
I'm sure we all have heard of the landmark Roe versus Wade and how, thanks to the ruling at the time, it guaranteed the right to abortion. But I think many don't know how that came to be and the history surrounding abortion in the U.S. or even how or why Roe versus Wade was gotten rid of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. I certainly had very little idea. I mean, you know, I'm Canadian, so it's not like we would ever learn that stuff in school.
In the U.S., we didn't learn about it in school.
Yeah, exactly. But after hearing the news, I wanted to learn more about it, and to that end, I did some research. Now, I'm going to present said research in this month's episode, assuming that others were curious about it too.
I mean, I am. I'm very keen to hear what you found out about it, and maybe add my own little tidbits here and there as we go along.
Oh, yeah, good idea. So, first, we need to know a little bit of history. So, this starts in the 60s. So in 1969, Norma McCorvey, who had previously given birth twice and who had given both of those children up for adoption, fell pregnant again and was seeking a legal abortion. At the time, abortion was legal in Texas, but only if the mother's life was in danger, and hers was not. Her other options included a dangerous and expensive back alley abortion or traveling abroad to a country where abortions were allowed. Neither option, of course, were feasible for Norma McCorvey, who was disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. Eventually, she was referred to Linda Coffey and Sarah Weddington, two lawyers who were keen on trying to challenge abortion rights. In order to understand why McCorvey was denied a legal abortion in the 1960s and why Coffey and Weddington were so eager to take on her case, we need to delve a little into the history of abortion in the United States. Mm-hmm. The prior to that time. It's quite surprising.
Yeah.
So, like I said, so surprisingly, abortion in the United States was mostly legal in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. So, like, you could generally get an abortion until, like, quickening, which is whenever you start to feel the baby moving around. But I guess, like, at the time, a lot of women would just say, no, the baby doesn't move. And then, like,
right. They would pretend like it's a stillbirth or something like that.
Yeah. Or just like, or they would just lie about like when they fell pregnant and like how far along they were because they couldn't really check it. Right.
Right.
So
technology.
Right. So generally, I mean, abortion was pretty legal. Mm-hmm. However, over the years, more and more restrictions were added. So in 1847, the American Medical Association was established, which benefited doctors by pushing midwives and homeopaths out of the medical market. Mm. Not only that, but in the mid to late 1800s, women were beginning to study in universities, many of whom mm-hmm. were aiming to study gynecology. So many see the founding of the AMA, or an organization which, at the time, consisted entirely of men, as an anti-feminist group. So a lot of people are saying that the AMA was mostly founded to, like, push...
keep women out of the medical field.
Yeah. And then in 1873, Congress passed the Comstock Law, which prohibited the distribution of anything lewd or obscene through the mail. It was mostly meant... Yeah, I know. Comstock rules are kind of weird. But it was mostly meant for publications, so books mm-hmm. or images or something like that.
So like Playboy, shit like that.
I mean, well, I follow this Twitter group on, what's her name? Oh, I forget, but she's like a sex historian in the UK.
Oh, okay.
And she often posts like postcards. So like France had this like obsession with these like nudie postcards for a long time.
Yeah. Nice.
It was pretty cool. So I guess it's supposed to be stopping that kind of stuff. Mm. But contraceptives were also included in this ban.
Oh, that's where that shit came from to start. All right.
Yeah. So at the end of the 1880s, abortions were illegal in most places across the country. It had also been posited that making abortions illegal gained traction in part as a response to increasing immigration. People, mainly men, were worried about the purity of the American population. So they wanted to ensure that as many white babies would be born as possible.
Yay, patriarchy.
Yeah, it's about, like, patriarchy, xenophobia, racism, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. And in 1896, the Catholic Church banned any and all abortions for its followers.
And yet, Catholic Church priests were sometimes the ones recommending and or giving abortions.
Also, facts, especially to the, like, the little, you know, people from their, what's it called?
Congregation.
I was thinking, like, Congress, and I'm like, that's the wrong word. But, yeah.
Their flock? Their congregation?
Yeah, their flock, yeah. That they, sorry. Like, you know, woohoo. Of course, okay, we know that banning abortions doesn't stop them. So people seeking abortions in the early 20th century were forced to turn to dubious drugs and tonics or have the procedure performed by unscrupulous doctors. It was a dangerous time for people with uteruses, and many were poisoned, infected, permanently injured, or killed.
Yep.
So, yeah, of course, by 1955, some people had had enough, and a conference was hosted by Planned Parenthood,
woohoo,
which was founded in 1916. At said conference, quote, conference attendees said that laws should be rewritten to allow doctors greater latitude to provide abortion services, which would improve public health and access to reproductive health care for people of different economic circumstances, end quote.
Yep. Agree with everything that says.
Right.
Very true. It accurate.
Very accurate. Makes a lot of sense. That was 1955, everybody. 1955. Yep. So following that, in the 1960s and 70s, there were a lot of high-profile abortion cases and reforms. Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, and New York repealed their abortion bans entirely. Even clergymen in some places were calling for the repeal of some abortion bans. It was this backdrop of changing attitudes around abortion that set the stage for Roe versus Wade.
And surprisingly, it was the Republicans who were pushing the...
Yeah.
The ban, the getting rid of the anti-abortion laws at the time.
Yeah, because I from what I understand from listening to podcasts and stuff is that originally Republicans were the liberals and the Democrats were the conservatives.
Is that how it was? It may have been that, but I think it's just more of like they focused on the health, the general public health benefits of it all. Right. As they're like conservative, saving money overall by, you know, not having people dying all the time. And
I mean, that makes sense. And like it's a providing abortions means a lesser burden to like foster care system and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a whole lot of sense.
Sure does. Republicans who may or may not be listening. Cough, cough. Sorry.
I mean, no, not just Republicans. I mean, like,
I know, just anybody in general. I'm just giving them shit because I can.
Fair. So in 1970, Coffey and Weddington filed a lawsuit against Henry Wade, who was a district attorney of Dallas County at the time. They not only filed on behalf of McCorvey, who was going under the pseudonym Jane Roe, but on behalf of all people who, quote, might become pregnant and want to consider all options, end quote. For 3 years, the duo battled in the courts all the way to the top. Their main argument for abortion was that the current laws banning abortion were in violation of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, which guarantees that the state cannot interfere in individuals' right to privacy, which includes making decisions about one's own body. Which makes a lot of sense. So they're basically arguing that, you know, having these abortion bans is unconstitutional, which I know how much you Americans love your Constitution.
Right. It is the foundation of our society and everything that we believe.
Exactly. So others were also included as plaintiffs in the lawsuit. So there was a married couple where the wife was suffering from some kind of, is a little bit vague, but it seemed like she had some kind of mental or emotional disorder, and she was advised to stop taking birth control, but also, but also not to get pregnant by her doctor. So her doctor was like, stop taking your birth control, but also don't get pregnant. But she's married. So like, so like what, like, you know, what is she going to do?
Right.
Yeah. And then another plaintiff was the doctor that McCorvey tried to get an abortion from originally, but he refused to perform the abortion because he had pending charges against him for performing two previous abortions.
Ah, so he didn't want to potentially get slapped with the third charge.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think, like, in all the cases, like, the charges were, like, about whether or not the patient's life was really in danger, right? Because that's the, those were the laws at the time. It's kind of interesting. And all argued, so like the couple, Jane Roe slash McCorvey and the doctor argued that the criminal code statutes were too vague and in violation of many amendments, the 14th in particular. In the middle of all this, McCorvey gave birth to a baby girl and put her up for adoption. And like the story of, for all of you who are listening, like I'm not going to go into it in this episode, but like, her life, McCorvey's life, and including like her children, the ones that she gave up for adoption, Norma, it's pretty interesting. And yeah, it's a bit of a wild ride. So I recommend reading into that on your own when you have time. It's kind of interesting. But anyway, what do we say? So in 1973, the Supreme Court struck down the Texas law banning abortion 7-2.
Nice.
So it was quite strongly, citing that a woman's right to an abortion was implicit in the right of privacy protected by the 14th Amendment. Basically, any laws that strictly banned abortion would be unconstitutional. So the court divided the just, and like another thing that happened because of this is like, I got like really upset with somebody because somebody commented on one of my Facebook posts recently that, yeah, like abortions were unregulated.
What?
He was a man, so
like, of course he was. Said, they don't know jack diddly about anything that has to do with not their bodies.
Yeah, I mean, and like therein lies the problem. So at this time, so the Roe versus Wade, part of the ruling was like, yes, these bans are unconstitutional, but they also set out like some guidelines on, you know, when abortions need interference by the state, or like whenever the states can set restrictions on abortion. So they divided up the gestation period into three trimesters, and they said for the stage prior to approximately the end of the first trimester, the abortion decision and its effectuation must be left to the medical judgment of the pregnant woman's attending physician. So the doctor decides whether they want to perform an abortion or not. So there's still, there's room for like doctors, if it's against their moral code or whatever, to deny the abortion.
And so the woman is free to seek out a doctor elsewhere.
Exactly. Then, second stipulation, For the stage subsequent to approximately the end of the first trimester, the state, in promoting its interest in the health of the mother, may, if it chooses, regulate the abortion procedure in ways that are reasonably related to maternal health. So, like, in that case, like, most of the states had bans on that, like, you know, after the first trimester, or like after 21 weeks or so, then it's like only abortions will be carried out if the mother's life is in danger. That's like pretty much what happened. And then for the stage subsequent to viability, so the after the second trimester, like usually in the in that time period, the fetus is viable if they're born prematurely. So at that point, it's considered to be its own sort of separate entity. It's like its own life. So the state, in promoting its interest in the potentiality of human life, may, if it chooses, regulate and even prescribe abortion, except where it is necessary and appropriate medical judgment for the preservation of the life or health of the mother.
Right.
So kind of, again, so mostly banned.
Mostly banned unless there is a medical issue that is going to cause harm to the mother, and therefore they have to abort for some reason.
Yeah. But in most cases, it's banned, which I think, like, you know, I'm pro-choice,
That is reasonable. I'm willing to work with that.
So this decision was upheld for nearly 50 years and was even solidified during a few high-profile cases like Planned Parenthood of Southern Pennsylvania versus Casey in 1992. And then, like, when Roe versus Wade is cited, usually this case is also cited because it was kind of like a...
It backed it up,
yeah. So it's kind of interesting. But Planned Parenthood of Southern Pennsylvania versus Casey was also a bit problematic, and I'll tell you why. So that same case also allowed the state to impose stricter rules on abortion without banning it outright, opening the door for other states to do the same. So they added a lot of stipulations. So, like, in the, like, Planned Parenthood was trying to argue that a lot of the things that they said were also unconstitutional, because they were trying to enact, like, a bunch of different restrictions. And I think, like, everything except one was accepted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, only one part was struck down, which I think had to do with the, like, it was like a 15-week abortion ban or something.
Yeah.
So that part was struck down, but I think other stuff, like having to wait 24 hours and having to listen to the fetal heartbeat and blah, 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 like that kind of stuff passed. So
all of the kind of semi-coercive stuff passed.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. So in 2018, the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is one of the charities that we support. Filed a suit on behalf of Jackson's Women's Health Organization, which was the last remaining abortion clinic in the state of Mississippi. They were trying to block the state's seemingly unconstitutional ban on abortion after 15 weeks. Citing Roe versus Wade, the federal district court struck down the ban. The decision was upheld in 2019 by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit for the same reason. However, so, like, this is, we're getting closer to kind of what's happening now. So, however, in 2020, the state of Mississippi appealed to the Supreme Court and asked the judges to review the ban. The current and very conservative panel of Supreme Court judges ruled 6-3 to uphold the Mississippi ban, stating that there was no constitutional guarantee to abortion, effectively striking down Americans' rights to an abortion.
In Mississippi at the time.
Yeah. Well, this is it. Like, this is what happened. So, like, whenever they say, like, they struck down Roe versus Wade,
This is the case.
This is the case. Yeah.
This is the case that they reviewed again and struck it down with.
Yeah. So, in the two lower courts,
it was upheld.
It was upheld. But then, like, finally, when it got to the Supreme Court judges said, like, oh, no, it's not. And 6-3. So, pretty strong. It's not that close either.
Yeah, it was pretty close to what the original ruling was, but on the opposite
direction. Yeah.
Right. Because when they put it in place originally, it was 7-2.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, after 50 years, we've kind of did a flip flop and we've totally switched. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. And there's a bunch of stuff too, because, I mean, you know, this is happening after the election of Donald Trump, and, like, Donald Trump enacted, like, the global gag order, and he is very anti-abortion, which is kind of ironic considering it's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I think, and I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he at one point was actually pro-abortion, but like for political reasons, I think he changed his tune.
Yes, but, and that is the case for a lot of politicians.
Yeah.
And if you, so like I was watching Netflix because like I do, because I just, you know, that's my way to relax. But they have a documentary on there that they did called Reversing Roe.
Okay.
And it kind of documents the journey of the Republican Party and the active political parties in from like the early 1960s all the way up until I think 2018 or 2019 and watching the progress of the Republican Party strategically going after abortion rights and how they were very tactful in the way that they approached getting people to have an emotional reaction and get on board with the pro-life part, the pro-life idea, and promoting that idea and pushing that idea and pushing different laws, new bans strategically in various states to try and get it up to the Supreme Court where they could push their ideas again at the Supreme Court to potentially get it overturned.
Yeah. Which... And I think in some cases too, like I was reading about, I forget what it is, but I think it was one of the Supreme Court justices or like one of the like defense lawyers or whatever. Anyway, in one of these cases, but the language that they were using to argue their point was like really strong, like you were saying, like trying to create that emotional. And they're like, oh, like during abortion, the baby is being ripped limb from limb. And then, you know, new scientific advancements now give us a better understanding of like how, if the fetus has feelings or not, like if they can actually feel that pain. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
So, because we know, we know, like at the stage where the fetus has, you know, discernible limbs, basically, it's like it's late in the gestation period. And at that point, like abortion is pretty much banned anyway. So it's like, how is this even an argument?
Right. Well, and the reason why they're doing it is because they're trying to create that emotional reaction. And they focus, so in the documentary and in some of the reading I had done to follow up with the documentary, they were saying that a lot of that, they made up a lot of stuff through their own rhetoric about like, it had to do with like the ripping the baby limb from limb. And there was like a medical doctor who went to, you know, testify at the Supreme Court. And she's like, look, most of the abortions that we're dealing with are first trimester abortions. They're happening within the first 21 weeks. It is not a living, it is not a, what you would consider a child or a human being at that point. It's still just a cluster of cells multiplying, working its way that direction, but it hasn't happened yet. And what they're talking about is like, the 1% of the 1% of abortions that happen, and those are, and the only reason that those ones happen so late is again because they're medically necessary to save the mother.
Right.
But that's what the party has focused on to create their rhetoric, because it creates fear. It creates that guttural reaction of, oh my God, that's terrible reaction that people will have to a child being hurt or a child being killed in general. So they're trying to build on that, but apply it to an unborn child, which is powerful. And they were very smart to do that. The unfortunate part of that is that they're basically taking away the ability for us to have autonomy over what happens to our bodies, especially in the US where we preach freedom of speech, freedom of choice.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, where's my freedom to choose what I can do or don't do with my body?
Yeah, that's, and like, it's kind of ironic because like a lot of people who are anti-vax are also like anti-abortion. And I'm like,
my biggest issue with the overturn of Roe versus Wade is that they didn't listen to actual medical factual information, and they went with the rhetoric instead.
Well, that's like, because I think, what are they saying now? They're saying that like, if you have a, oh God, what is it called? Like an implantation of the fetus into like the fallopian tubes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's
a word for it, but like, it's like, you know, it implants outside of the womb, but like, I mean, like you're going to die. Like that's not a good time for anybody. But I think there's like a mandate now that like doctors have to try to re-implant the embryo into the uterus. It's medically impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Re-implantation does not work, and it's just like unnecessarily invasive and dumb. So.
And it's also damaging to the mother. Like,
yeah,
you have to go through a medical procedure to have it removed in the first place. So one, you don't die, and then two, you're being forced to go through another medical procedure because it's mandated, just so that they can attempt to re-fertilize you with an egg that was already fertilized in the wrong area that they've had to remove anyways, which, as you've said, is medically impossible. So basically, you're just putting this woman through more harm and grief and more medical procedures that she doesn't necessarily need just to satisfy your agenda, your political agenda of, oh, well, we can't give you an abortion, so we can do this for you instead.
Yeah. And like the wild thing is I think like that dude who was like trying to pass that mandate, somebody was like, did you even like Google, like did you even do any research about this, like consult with a medical professional? He's like, well, how would I know it's not possible? I'm not a doctor. And it's like, bro, it's like that's a 10-second Google search, honestly. Like
a 10-second Google search, or it's a fucking conversation with a goddamn doctor.
Yeah,
like do your fucking job, bro. Like, well,
at this point, it's kind of like you were saying, it's like ignorance, but it's also on purpose in order to like get what they want passed, basically.
Yeah, they're purposefully ignoring information so that they can, and they're making shit up too. Like the term that they were using, which for the life of me, I cannot remember. But they made up a term to talk about how the baby is removed during the third trimester, which is inaccurate, but it's not a medical term, but they use it as if it were.
Oh,
as if it were a medical term in some of their bands that they were trying to push. And then it just became a term that everybody used.
I gotta watch this documentary. It sounds really interesting.
It's really interesting, and it's very logically laid out, and it has a lot of factual evidence from both sides. Like, they have Republicans who are talking about, you know, why they did what they're doing, and, you know, their opinions, their thoughts on the process. And then they have a medical doctor who was involved in the court case, the Supreme Court case most recently. And they, you know, they follow her around, and then they talk to other doctors, and they look at the impact that it's had on both the Republican Party and the people who, you know, fall into that group, whether they're extreme right or they're just, you know, more center right or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact it's had on the various communities that are dealing with, because they have abortion centers, dealing with these issues more viscerally and in their face.
That's pretty hardcore. Because of
all the protests in front of the centers and the doctors who
work at the centers. Ugh. And like I was during my reading, like I heard some things about like certain clinics like getting bombed, basically. Mm-hmm. Like there's no
clinics have been bombed, doctors have been killed.
Yeah.
Like they have followed doctors home and or killed them in their off time because they knew who they were, they knew where they lived and things like that.
And like that's so ironic. It's just like, you know, life is precious, but I'm gonna kill this guy. Anyway.
Yep. The hypocrisy. It's so wonderful.
Bruh. So anyway, I'm sure we've all heard the following argument from at least one person. So like, quote, abortions haven't been made illegal. The states can simply just decide on their own what they want to do, end quote. Which is like, one of my coworkers said that to me the other day, but like technically it's correct, but it also like really bothers me at the same time.
Yep.
Because it's like, you know, the U.S. is a big country. So if abortions are banned in one state and the states around it, as is often the case, it would make it impossible for disadvantaged people to seek one. Like getting time off work, paying for transportation, and paying for the procedure will become impossible for many Americans.
And then considering gas prices now as well,
it's even worse.
It's even worse. Like you're paying, if you're in like, I'm going to take California for an example, just because their gas prices are insanely high. They're like, there's no, I just talked to a coworker who lives in California, and she said that there's nowhere in California that gas is less than $6.50 a gallon.
Wow, it's expensive.
You're paying at least $6.50 a gallon, and that's cheap in California right now, which is insane. But taking that gas price for an example, which is the extreme, but like having to pay that much to potentially have to travel 300 or 400 miles one way to get to a state that's going to allow abortion, depending on where you live, and then travel back. And or potentially have to take an airplane to try and get to that state to go to a clinic.
Well, it's not only that, because like I was thinking about this too, because those rules of like you have to have like a 24-hour waiting period and blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, you would have to like go there for a couple of days also and then come back. Like, it's just yikes.
Yep. It's not an easy thing to do. And like So I used to the clinic that I used to go to for my lady checkups was a Planned Parenthood in Washington State, and there were occasionally people who were outside protesting with these grotesque photos of like stock images of like fetuses, and they're like, "You're killing your baby," and I'm like, "I'm just getting a checkup, fuck you." Like, why are you yelling at me? I'm literally just going to have medically necessary yearly physical. I'm not getting an abortion, but you're treating me as if I'm a social pariah because I happen to visit a Planned Parenthood, which has reasonable prices for their medical services that they give.
Yeah. My friend used to get her PAPs at Planned Parenthood all the time. And like, that's kind of my other point. So, banning abortions will cause abortion clinics to disappear, and abortions aren't the only services offered. So like STI testing, pre and postnatal care, contraceptive care, sexual health checkups, like women's checkups, like these services will likely all be gone. And like you said, like those places usually offer those services at a reasonable price or for free. So like who's going to be disproportionately affected? It's going to be people of color, even like people in the LGBTQ plus community and, you know, like people who are at or below the poverty line. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
not just a war on abortions. It's also like a class thing too.
Yeah, it's they've done a really good job of focusing on the emotional side of it and keeping it about the abortion and not letting the rhetoric change to talk about also who is being affected by it.
Right.
You don't really ever hear about that in the news when they talk about, oh, the abortion ban, blah 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 blah. It's and this clinic closed down, blah 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 blah. It doesn't talk about who's being affected. It just talks about what's happening, and that's it.
Yeah,
and I think that's something that needs to change. Is we need to start recognizing who's being affected, and what are they doing to help those people get their doctor's appointments, and make sure that they're receiving the medical care that they need.
That's kind of like when my coworker, when he said that, I was like, look, listen, like this is a whole slew of medical care that now is going to be denied to like millions and millions of people. Like that's like, I don't understand how that couldn't be considered like unconstitutional.
Right.
Oh, it's crazy. So then the question is, how did this happen? Right. Especially when the majority of Americans support the right to choose. So like after this was after Roe versus Wade was struck down, or maybe even before, like, you know, Americans were polled and it seems the majority actually support abortion rights. So to answer that, I want to take a closer look at the three Supreme Court judges who voted to uphold Roe versus Wade and the six who voted against it.
Okay.
So I did a little research just through Wikipedia or whatever on all of the Supreme Court judges, one of whom now is retired, and he was replaced by Ketanji Brown Jackson, which is good. But most people are still on the Supreme Court, so it's more or less like the structure, I guess, between like liberal leaning Supreme Court judges and conservative judges hasn't changed. It's still like this. So four. So there's three Supreme Court judges that were for upholding Roe v. Wade. Well, three to four. It's kind of weird. So there's Stephen G. Breyer, mm-hmm. who he's now retired, and he was replaced by Ketanji. So he is 83 years old. He's from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. He was nominated by Bill Clinton in 1994. And his main arguments were that the judiciary should include public participation and opinion in governmental laws. Mm-hmm. And he consistently struck down anti-abortion laws throughout his career.
Nice.
Mm. So he was a pretty good guy. Then next, there's Sonia Sotomayor. So she's 68 years old. She's from New York City, New York. She was nominated by Barack Obama in 2009. Mm-hmm. And she grew up in the Bronx. Nice. She's actually, her story is very interesting. So she grew up in the Bronx. Like, they were very poor when they were kids. She fought a lot of crime in the 1970s in New York, which was...
Okay.
Yeah, that was like an insane time for New York. And uh-huh. she was in the thick of it. And she's the first woman of color and the first Latinx justice on the Supreme Court.
Nice.
Yeah. Props. She's really cool. And then there was Elena Kagan. So, mm-hmm. or there is Elena Kagan. She's 62. She's also from New York. She was also nominated by Barack Obama in 2010. So in 1997, she wrote a memo urging Clinton to support a ban on late-term abortions. Mm-hmm. So she's actually, like, even though she's sort of left-leaning, she's not really left. She's kind of a swing vote. She can go either way.
Right.
But she was the first woman to become the Solicitor General. That's pretty cool. But she often agrees with Breyer, and she really disagrees most of the time with Alito. And Alito is, like, the big problem. Mm. So those were the three that voted in favor of Planned Parenthood, basically. So they wanted to uphold, like, Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see, like, through their nomination, like, who nominated them, liberal presidents, mm-hmm. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and even, like, where they grew up, New York, very liberal state, and California, very liberal state. So those are those kinds of trends. Now, to talk about the people who were against. First, I want to talk about the Chief Justice, John Roberts. So he's 67. He's from Buffalo, New York. So he's from New York. Mm, he was nominated by George W. Bush in 2005.
Okay.
And during this one, he voted on the side of Mississippi. So he thought that Mississippi should be able to ban abortion after 15 weeks. But he also said that Roe v. Wade should not be struck down. He mm-hmm. said, quote, it was a settled law of the land, end quote. So we keep that, but Mississippi should be able to make that restriction.
And they were talking about after 15 weeks.
Yeah, ban after 15 weeks.
So they're creeping into the first trimester, but they haven't completely gotten rid of the first trimester, which is what they were trying to do in Texas. They were trying to ban anything after 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And most women don't even realize that they're pregnant until about 6 weeks, if not a little later. Because,
yeah, it's a pretty small window, but I mean, at least it's a window. And I guess, like, for him, so, like, I read some more, and then in 1999, he did a radio interview where he said that state laws are more attuned to what's happening in that area. So it seems that he, like, mm-hmm. supports, like, the states deciding for themselves what to do. Like, it's more about that and less about abortion.
Right.
I think. It's just kind of...
And that's fine. Like, I understand them trying to leave it up to the states because the U.S. is such a large country. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make sweeping declarations and have it apply evenly across the country because... what works in New York won't necessarily work in rural Kansas.
Yeah, and that's what he was saying.
Yeah. So, like, I understand that, and I'm not mad about it. I'm just.
But I think like medical care is like a little bit different though.
Right.
Like everybody right. needs medical care.
Right.
Yeah.
There are some things where I feel like a sweeping declaration could be useful. Processes and procedures for like how to deal with like COVID, for example, like
sure.
how do we track these things if yeah. you had a sweeping declaration it would be a lot easier because then everyone would know what to fucking do.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Canada was like that too, like the provinces, like some provinces did a great job, other ones were like an absolute nightmare.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's those kinds of things are problems. Oh, for sure. So So the, okay, so here's the other five. So first one, Samuel Alito, problem person. So he's 72. He's from Trenton, New Jersey. He was nominated by George W. Bush in 2006. Mm-hmm. He replaced Sandra Day O'Connor. Sandra Day O'Connor was the first female Supreme Court judge. Yeah. He was considered, or he is considered, one of the most conservative justices. And he said that Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. So he's always been against Roe v. Wade. Yeah. So of course he would like vote
try
to strike it down
as much as quickly as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Then next we have Clarence Thomas. Yeah. He's 74. He's from Pinpoint, Georgia. Georgia. Okay. He was nominated by George H.W. Bush in 1991. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting. So he was the chairman of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in 1982. Okay. So Alito is one of the most conservative. Clarence is the most conservative.
Which is surprising considering the fact that he was in charge of equal opportunity employment, which is
right.
Strange, but all right.
Yeah. It's a little bit strange. And then while he was the chairman of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, he sexually harassed Anita Hill, who was working as his advisor at the time. And she, it kind of created some like controversy whenever he was getting, when he was like nominated and like for his mm-hmm. appointment, they had a hearing about it. And Joe Biden was participating, and Joe Biden was a piece of garbage. So if you like, again, listeners, I'm not going to go into Alita Hill, but like, if you don't know about it, I really suggest reading into it.
Yep. Politicians in general flip-flop on like a dime depending on what they think is what their constituents want.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So. Yeah. And I mean like, yeah, Joe Biden is kind of a problem. Like he also flip-flopped on like busing. Mm-hmm. In like the 1960s, 70s, whenever that was. Like, so.
70s, 80s.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Should look it was at 70s, that. 80s, because that's civil rights era.
That was a big problem. But anyway, yep. Clarence Thomas is a big piece of garbage. And then, so next one, Neil Gorsuch. I don't know. Gorsuch. Whatever his name is. So he's 54. He's from Denver, Colorado. He was nominated by Donald Trump.
Yay! Three of those. I think he elected three of them.
There's three. So this is one of three. So notes. He is an originalist. There's a couple of them that are originalists, which they kind of just want to follow the original wording of the Constitution and not really take any liberties with it.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And like maybe they don't want like to change anything. So it's kind of interesting. He supported the Gulf War.
Okay.
Interestingly enough with this guy, he attends a church that is friendly to the LGBTQ plus community.
Mm-hmm. Huh. All right. I mean,
it's just different. That was a little tidbit that I found out that it was a little bit unexpected. And I was like, oh, and then here's scumbag number two, Brett Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So he's 57. Mm-hmm. He's from Washington, D.C. He was nominated by Donald Trump in 2018. And this is like the most ironic thing I found out about him. He recommended Bill Clinton's impeachment when he was working under Ken Starr. Right. Okay. Yep. Uh-huh. And then he's considered to be a moderate, surprisingly. So he's not like an ultra conservative. Okay. And then of course, Christine Blasey Ford and other women accused him of sexual harassment and assault. He became a senator with like a 50 to 48 vote.
So barely.
Barely, yeah. But apparently in June, which I did not hear about at all, somebody tried to assassinate him.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's shocking.
It is shocking.
I definitely do not recommend or condone assassinating political figures.
No, don't do that.
Just like, let's not do that. Like, yeah. Let's use words, people. We're not for.
Yeah. So, well, and like, so what happened was the would-be assassin like went to his house, and then I guess like upon reaching the house, he had some kind of change of heart or revelation or whatever, or he got scared, who knows. And he like called 911 on himself and gave himself up. Okay. It's like no shots were fired or anything, like, well, but like
that's good. But also like just go home at that point.
What?
Unless you were having like a mental break
Probably.
And that was what was causing, that's what caused you to go there in the first place. And you finally became loose and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah. And like allegedly, like the reason what drove this person to the assassination attempt is because of the like Roe v. Wade stuff. And like Brett Kavanaugh's involvement in it. It's very interesting. But they didn't go through with it in the end. And then finally we have Amy Connie Barrett. So she's 50. She's from New Orleans, Louisiana. She was also nominated by guess who?
Ba-ba-da-da, the Cheeto. I mean Trump. Sorry.
Yeah, but she was nominated in 2020. So she also was very close. So she was voted into the Senate 52-48. Mm-hmm. So all Democrats and even one Republican were against her appointment. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Well, they were pushing her appointment like right there before he left office. They're like rushing that shit is what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she replaced Ruth Bader Ginsburg too, mm-hmm. which is kind of unfortunate. But so it was controversial because she was nominated only 38 days before the election, which many considered to be too close to the line. Senate mm-hmm. Republicans refused to hold hearings for Merrick Garland in 2016 because it was an election year. So right. like Obama had nominated Merrick Garland, who's now serving some other post. I can't really remember. Mm-hmm. But like the Republicans were like, no, you can't do that. It's too close to the election.
It's an election year. You can't do that. What are you?
But then like, you know, they're trying to nominate a conservative person. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of like their whole strategic,
yeah,
you know, their game plan. Their game plan was to change the Supreme Court from a mostly Democratic court to a mostly mm-hmm. conservative court so that they could get the result that they were after,
yeah.
which was striking down or, you know, imposing more restrictions on Roe v. Wade.
Yeah. And it's just like, well, and like, you know, that and like a bunch of other stuff, too, because like now that Roe v. Wade is gone, it opens up like a whole other can of worms. Like it's yep. going to be
they
like
could, they could try and go after gay marriage rights.
Yeah.
And laws. They could go after, you know, equal opportunity and things like that. Or equal,
that's like, also true.
Like employment, things like, and like those kinds of laws and regulations that are in place. Like
yep.
they could go after literally anything they wanted and try and get it trucked down.
Yeah, I think I saw something. I forget which judge it is, but like one of the judges ruled in this case one time. It was like a free speech case, and he basically said that it was okay for a business to say that they weren't going to serve Jews as long as like the like Jewish people could go somewhere else and get the service.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like, I guess like the idea.
Jesus fucking Christ. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's like one of the Supreme, I forget which one it is, but it's one of the Supreme Ugh. Court judges like ruled that in like a previous case in the past. It, like,
that's so wrong on so many levels. Like, yeah. really? Just really?
Oof.
It's God, a big oof. They need to go back to kindergarten and learn how to share.
I mean, that's not a bad idea. We'll do like a, what is it, like Billy Madison kind of thing to send them back to grade school.
Yep. Go back to grade school. Relearn some basic human, you know, decency please. Yeah. Thank you. Have a nice day.
So as you can see, currently the Supreme Court is majority conservative. There is only really one true liberal, while the other two that voted to maintain Roe v. Wade are considered to be more moderate leaning. Mm-hmm. Federal Supreme Court justices serve life terms, or they can choose to retire earlier. Many yep. of the justices nominated by Trump are quite young and will remain on the court for, I don't know, like 20, 30 more years. So, yep. yeah, if we want to get our right to abortion back, we're going to have to be patient and smart. Supreme Court justices are nominated by the president and then voted in by the Senate. So there are two senators from each state, which are elected by the people. It's mm-hmm. important to participate in Senate elections because yes. senators vote on important laws and also, as previously stated, confirm Supreme Court appointments. So yep. together, we need to educate ourselves on our state's senators, who they are, and what they're likely to support and dissent on, and then yep. vote. The same yep. goes for presidential elections. You know, I know it sounds daunting because, like, me too. I also don't want to do. I wish things were simpler, but unfortunately, that's not the case.
Right.
Yeah, so it's kind of daunting, time-consuming, but this is what needs to be done to ensure our rights. Most of all, we need to suss out those politicians who would ratify the right of abortion into the Constitution so this kind of thing doesn't happen again. I know, like, a lot of people, they're just like, oh, we can't change the Constitution. But
you can.
Like,
it's happened. Fuck
it's
that.
It's a piece of paper, anyway.
It's a piece of paper that was written over 250 years ago. Mm. And I would like to point out, there have been amendments to it already. So, yeah, you can fucking change it.
Yeah. It's pretty
also,
wild.
Also, society, our values, and our thoughts have changed from 250 years ago when it was a group of white guys being like, oh no, we don't have representation in England, the country that we came from, i.e. they were immigrants. We're going to make our own country and we're going to make our own constitution and laws that we think are fair because we don't like to be prosecuted for our religious beliefs anymore. La-di-da-di-da. America.
That's pretty wild. Well, even at the time, like, technology changes too. Like, at the time of Roe v. Wade, it was, I think, stated, like, in the court proceedings that, you know, now abortions are relatively safe, especially like in the first trimester. So there really is no reason to kind of, like, deny somebody that medical treatment. Yeah. And then
it's safer than sticking a coat hanger up your hoo-ha.
Oh God.
Which is what a lot of women do and or using potentially unsterilized equipment from a backdoor doctor to get an abortion done.
Well,
which
sepsis.
Which is what we've gone back to.
Yeah. No.
Which is what we've gone back to. We've gone back to people resorting to drastic measures to try and keep themselves from having to either feed a mouth that they have no way of feasibly feeding because they can barely feed themselves. Mm-hmm. To dealing with the shame from the community of having gotten pregnant in the first place. Like, if our communities and our country was more accepting of people being pregnant and being single mothers, and, you know, there wasn't
and there
as
was
much
support shame, for those mothers,
it would be a different story. But there's so much shame and stigmas against those people, against those women, that it's just like, what else do you expect them to do?
Mm-hmm.
You've backed them into a corner. What do you expect them to do?
If conservatives could wait 50 years for Roe v. Wade to be struck down, we can match their grit and surpass their determination to get what we want.
Oh, hell yeah.
We can do it.
It's just a matter of buckling down, paying attention, and educating the next generation and continuing to educate the 18-year-olds as they're coming out of high school and being able to vote and being like, look, I know it's boring, I know you don't want to hear about how it's your constitutional right, but, like, it is so important for you to pay attention and take just a little bit of time, 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes of your time that you're sitting there scrolling on your phone anyways, go fucking to a Wikipedia page, look up who's running for Senate that year in your state, take the time to look at what have they voted for in the past. What have they supported in the past? Who is this person? And, you know, educate yourself. Don't just be like, oh, I'm only going to look at the Democrats and the Republicans. Fucking look at the Independent Party. Look at the Green Party. Yeah. There are other political parties out there. Don't just fall into the trap that so many have, that there's only two. There's not.
Yeah, there's other options. And then
there
also
are other options.
And like you can build, like, I mean, you can build a party from the ground up. Like, you know,
hell,
like,
yeah.
Because, like, I mean, a lot of people who, like, participate in municipal government, even, like, become mayors or whatever, later move on to become senators, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, if possible, like, try to pay attention even from those early stages of somebody's political career and support them in that way.
It's a quick Google search, people. Yeah. Like, Google each of the senators. Take fucking 10 minutes out of your day of your scrolling on Facebook, scrolling on Instagram, looking at Snapchat. Like, take 10 minutes and look the person up and make an educated decision. And please look at things that are factual, not nonsense. Dark web nonsense. Please. Yeah. Anyways.
Time to
wrap
go.
It up for today, guys. All right. So that's all we've got for today. And I really hope you enjoyed learning about abortion and Roe versus Wade and some of the history behind it, as well as the individuals who are responsible for it being struck down. I know Caitlin probably enjoyed doing some of the research, and I enjoyed kind of looking into it myself, it was not necessarily a fun topic to research, but it was one that I do think is necessary.
Well said. So also, if you liked this episode, please don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, etc. on whatever platform you're listening to this on.
You can also support us by becoming a Patreon. Patreons have access to exclusive content, AMAs, and more. Proceeds will be donated to the Center for Reproductive Rights and Cool Earth. All links are in the description.
And the Center of Reproductive Rights is still out there fighting the good fight, trying to get our rights back. So now more than ever, you know, donations are important. Yeah, we got to support. So check out our website to read our sources and accompanying blog post on this episode.
And that's it for this month. So we'll see you next month.
All right. See you then. Bye.
Bye. That's it for today, folks.
Thanks so much for tuning in.
And as always, please support this work by subscribing and donating to our cause at www.teamgetoverit.com.
Donors get access to specific content like stickers, t-shirts, and postcards from our journey.
You can donate for as little as $5 and the benefits build from there.
Go to our website for more info.
Or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Team Get Over It.
Thanks for listening.
And catch us next time on Get Over It.
Let us begin.
All right, we're beginning, folks, in 3, 2. That was me.
Yeah, too. Yeah, I'm also pretty tired because I spent like the last two nights drinking with people, so. No, you're right.
Hold back a couple of the words I was going to use. I was like, nope, that's not appropriate. fuck, what was one of the terms?
That's not a good time for anybody. Give me a hot minute. What's her name? The new one.
I'm like, on the Gulf War, knock it off. Give us more oil.
That's basically what happened.
Okay. All right. Good.
Interesting.